Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's edition of the War Report. We have, again, a full house. I think it's five of us on today, so I'm going to get right to it. Last week, we'll introduce everyone after I do my little intro here. Last week, we did the first part of a show that I call The War Report on Public Education, Inside the Pending ESA, which is the Elementary Secondary Education Act, the Trojan Horse that Threatens Public Education. We had over 1,200 live listeners for that show. After the show, got many letters, emails, and I just want to shout out to three of the people who wrote me. First, Susie S. in Minnesota. She was extremely excited about having a source that would try and make people aware and understand some of the most salient issues in education today, and particularly the ESEA. I got another one from Terry P. in Florida. Hers was pretty much the same thing. Thanks for making us aware of the issues and increasing our understanding of those issues, and particularly the ESEA, since we don't know a lot about it. But the one that stood out the most for me came from my mythical unnamed person that I move around the country every time that I want to quote or say something that this person has sent to me. This time I'm going to put her in Hawaii. And so I just said something I should, I messed that up. But anyway, my question is, if we pass ESEA, what, with or without the Tester Amendment, what will this look like going forward, say 2 or 3 years down the line? What the person was saying was, are people who are pushing the current version of ESEA bills in the Senate and in the House, are they saying that this bill, with or without the Tester Amendment, is okay? And if so, what would public education look like going down the road? Another person that remains anonymous said also that teachers don't know what's in the different versions of the bill, and their unions are not making the union positions clear, and the unions are not surveying the membership to get their position on the bills. They're just going ahead and endorsing bills or rejecting bills without talking to the membership. That stood out because basically that's what this show is going to be about, in terms of trying to make people aware of the most salient issue pertaining to the war on public education today and the next few days, as to almost like the reorganizing or authorizing No Child Left Behind if there's no major changes to the bill. Race to the top. These two things have killed us. So I wanted to make people aware that, one, that the House and the Senate have already, quote, to bring their bills together and hopefully come out with something. What will that something be? With that question, I'm going to welcome back Dr. Young. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, James. Glad to be here.
Okay. Dr. Turner. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, James. Great to be here.
Bob Schieffer. Hi, Bob. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dr. Miller.
And I hope Jeanette is with us.
I am.
Welcome back.
Thanks for
having
me.
One thing that everyone has in common, they've all been on the show in the past, and they were willing to come back for a second or third time. That's cool. Let's get right to it. And what's happening in turn? Another thing that I wanted to do is this. I want to make sure the stakeholders, the teachers, the parents, the students to some extent, teacher organization, parent organization, were aware and wanted to find out their position, because this thing is coming up for a vote pretty soon, and we need to all take action to try and influence it so that it comes our way. With that, Vicki, tell us what your position is as you understand what's going forward with these two bills.
Well, overall, my position would be that No Child Left Behind dictated the terms for accountability, flexibility, and choice, and I do not see Every Child Achieves going very far from that. In other words, I think it really does do the same thing, only it shifts things a little bit and actually expands some of the things that have continued to privatize our public education system.
Jesse?
Yes. As we're looking at the new versions, it's just a shell game. Right now, the feds look at the account and hold children accountable, teachers accountable, poor schools accountable, but not the programs they recommend or the interventions they create. In other words, the feds are not held accountable. And the new version they're talking about says, well, let us move the feds aside and let us keep the same people held accountable, children, teachers, and local schools, but leave states in charge and never, ever hold those states accountable.
Okay, Bob?
Well, Vicki and Jesse are old friends, but their position is at odds with most of the progressive education community groups like the Network for Public Education, Badass Teachers, Parents Across America, and FairTest agree that the bill that the Senate will be taking up on shortly after July 7th, after the Independence Day recess, is a significant improvement, not perfect, but far better than the current No Child Left Behind law, which would be left in place if people vote no, and does in several ways. One, it eliminates the federal accountability structure, though it still includes too much testing, and we all support the so-called Senator Tester's amendment to roll back the testing requirement. It gets the feds out of the accountability business. Yes, states can still impose that. But across the country, we've been winning in state after state this year, getting state legislatures to roll back test-based accountability. It also, the bipartisan bill the Senate will be taking up, takes power out of the hands of the Secretary of Education, now Arne Duncan, to do crazy things like race to the trough that make the system even worse. So it's not nirvana, but it would be a substantially better policy in terms of improvement. It takes the Fed's foot off the testing accelerator and eliminates entirely the federally mandated accountability structure of adequate yearly progress and reconstruction, reconstitution, and whatnot. That's probably the best we can get out of Congress right now, and the real-world choices in Washington, D.C. are keeping the current No Child Left Behind law or making the significant change that the Senate bill would allow.
Okay. Jeanette?
I really lean a little more towards what Bob was just saying, that when it comes to the state legislation, which is really mostly what I deal with here in New York, you know, we're very much not into making any concessions and making any, saying, oh, well, you know, it's the best we can get. I really push much further because I feel like on the state level, I have a lot, you know, us parents and our organizations that are expanding our opt-out movement, we have a lot more control over what we're doing on the state level. So we don't have to negotiate as much. Whereas on the federal level, as Bob's saying, you know, it's better than what was there, and it will put some control back to the state, which then gives more power to the parents and teachers and educators and the opt-out movement, in that we can then continue our fight on this end, and we won't have to hear, well, hey, it's a federal mandate, so there's nothing we can do about it here. So it does put more pressure on our own local legislators, and that we do have a lot more control over.
Tell us your organization, that wonderful group there in New York.
I have two. I have Long Island Opt Out, obviously here on Long Island, and then I also have New York State Allies for Public Education, and that's a statewide group.
Okay. And that those two groups pulled off what we're going to call the New York miracle. You know, Texas had their miracle, which was not a miracle, and then New Orleans had its miracle, which was not a miracle, but New York pulled off a real miracle this past May. I'm still giddy about that. So, all right, back to the real world. This is interesting because, Bob, the organizations that you mentioned and your position, oh, Bob, by the way, is with Fair Test Examiner. I don't trust what I see and what I think I understand is in the two bills and what may be the compromised version that gets enacted. You say, you know, move the feds out, which I'm totally, totally for. Turn it back over to the states. That's back to Plessy versus Ferguson back in the 1800s. I don't trust the states as far as I can pick up the Empire State Building off any corner. So, like Jeanette just said, I am, I guess, maybe more radical and would want to see both, not only No Child Left Behind scrapped, Race to the Top scrapped, but any version that comes out that does not mimic as closely as possible as the original 1965 Act falls too short for me. Back to you, Vicki.
Well, I'd like to go back to this idea that this either version, either the House or Senate, or what will actually come out if these pass, is a combination. That somehow, because it's going to be a little bit better, that doesn't mean that it's really best for the nation. And I think after waiting 13 years, you know, having educated a whole generation under the dictates of No Child Left Behind, that we have to look down the road and say, is this going to be good enough for another decade? And the answer for me is obviously a no, because of what is actually in the bill and because of what is not in the bill. And what we are being told, as far as the AFT says, there's lots of things that they've stated that simply are not fully true. I don't know if they haven't read the actual legislation, but I think what they have put out thus far is very misleading. And it still doesn't get away from the big problem with No Child Left Behind, in taking it from an anti-poverty war or an anti-poverty law to one that is a national accountability mechanism. That still stays in, because all of the plans, you know, are going through an approval process. And, you know, just maybe I should give some specific examples about, you know, the Every Child Achieves Act. You know, it's like, where would you start? Well, how about multiple measures? And this is a place where, you know, it's fine to look at individual states and what they can do at the state level, but when you have such inequality among the states, that is why the law came into existence for states like mine. But when they talk about putting in multiple non-test measures, there's a big if in the law, and that is the way it's written, with an if. If the state is able to prove validity and reliability, and that means having a state that has the capacity to do that and has the resources. And when I look at Idaho, that isn't where we're at. You know, we just barely have the money to float schools. So that's one example. I won't take everybody's time, but that is the one example I would say with the way the legislation's actually written, the actual wording of the law. And that is what it'll come down to.
Jesse?
Well, the way I see it, I've traveled so far through Connecticut and New York, and I'm in New Jersey now. And we're supposed to believe that the states are going to be nicer and better. Well, let me tell you what the parents are saying, what the teachers are saying on the ground. They're saying they don't trust Malloy, Governor Malloy in Connecticut. They don't trust Governor Cuomo in New York. They don't trust Governor Christie. So I'm not seeing the state right now that is leading the way and saying we're going to use multiple measures, a more fair and balanced assessment framework, and we're going to lessen the testing. I mean, I haven't seen a governor say that yet. What about Florida, 117 assessment? I mean, is Governor Scott really going to lead the way for a better assessment framework in Florida? Or Governor Walker, in Wisconsin? I'm not seeing it in Texas. I'm not seeing it. In Mississippi, I'm not seeing it. So my feeling is you compromise on many things, but we do not compromise on our children.
Well, you're just saying what I said in terms of going back to Plazzi versus Ferguson, the birthplace of separate and supposedly equal, which was separate and unequal. So now, again, remember what my purpose is for doing this format is that I want to get the stakeholders' view. I want, hopefully, more teachers and more parents tuning in today or going to the archive and get a more clear awareness of this bill that we're talking about, its history, what's in it, what's not in it, what it may be in it, what the impact may be now and in the future. And you guys are the people that I think are the best to help me get that across. Jeanette, back to you. The parent organization, the ground roots organization that you are a part of, you guys did a phenomenal job on all levels. Is it important what we're doing today to make people aware?
This is Bob.
Yeah, I'm listening as everybody's talking, and I think this is things to be aware. First of all, I think everybody probably on this call feels the exact same way about all the issues, about testing, about VAM, about, English language learners and special education students. I think we would probably agree on everything across the board on what it should look like ideally. So I think it's more of a question of what will this look like if we say no, or what will it look like if we say yes and then say yes to the amendment added in, or so I think it's like almost two different things being discussed as far as what it is that in an ideal world what should it look like, and what do we have on the table, what are the possibilities that could come out of federal government. And when it comes to us saying that that a key point is to have it go back to the state, it's not because we trust our state lawmakers to do the right thing. It's that if it goes back to the states, the parents and educators will have more power with our resistance movements. So it's more so that Cuomo, tops the list on bad guys in this situation, but I have more influence on taking him down than I would with the federal government. So I can us parents and teachers in New York, we had over 200,000 kids, almost a quarter of the students in grade 3-8 that opted out of the test. My kids' two teachers, they did not get they were not capable of getting a score because we had enough kids in their classes opt out of the test. One only had two kids taking the test in the class. So they didn't even have enough to generate the score. So although Cuomo is pushing through higher percentages tied to evaluation, we can stop that ourselves. But what happens is then if the federal government comes in and starts putting in sanctions now for the districts or states or whoever that supersedes the state regulations, now we have a problem more than what we have if the state is under control with that. So if you see what I'm saying, where it's not that we're trusting the state to control the situation, it's that we can influence them a lot more. Our legislators are now terrified because of how many people are involved in this movement and opting out. They now are, for next legislative session, know that if they don't start making significant changes, we will vote them out.
And in fact, the New York legislature and Governor Cuomo agreed to some very modest changes in the end of session bill that was just adopted last week because of the grassroots pressure. Look, yeah, I think, Dr. Miller, you asked the good question. What will the future look like if no bill passes in Congress compared to what if some bill? If no bill passes, it's more of the same. We know that we've had 13 years of No Child Left Behind. It's been an utter failure. It failed even by its own terms. If the Congress passes nothing, and that's the only alternative to passing one of these bills or a mix of two, then there'll be more No Child Left Behind. Barack Obama and Arne Duncan are in office until January 2017. They will make it worse, as Duncan has repeatedly done. The Senate bill eliminates federal test-based accountability. It puts the fight back at the states where we have won. Several states have adopted opt-out bills this year. In California, Jesse, I think the best model in the nation, Governor Brown is moving towards multiple indicators. Victoria, it doesn't force Idaho to do the right thing, but activists in Idaho like you have a better chance at changing what goes on in Boise than changing what goes on in Washington, D.C. So it creates the opportunity for us to push forward and to win, and it gets rid of a lot of real bad stuff in the federal law. The question is, even if the bill passes the Senate as now written, even with the addition of Senator Tester's amendment, which rolls back the testing requirement, what does the House do? The House bill eliminates federal test-based accountability, but does some pretty bad stuff as well. We need to keep monitoring this to get the best bill possible move back towards sanity. We're not going to leap from the insanity of No Child Left Behind to the perfect system that Fairtest and everybody else wants this year or any time in the near future.
Vicki, I want you to come in, but then I want to come back to you, Bob, in terms of the House bill. Remember, my thing is, it's all a Trojan horse. What's inside?
Well, what is it a Trojan horse for, Dr. Miller?
What did you say?
What is it a Trojan horse for?
Okay, I can give you an example of that. Let me go back to the teacher evaluations was mentioned. The AMT says it takes the federal government out of teacher evaluations. If you read the Every Child Achieve Act, it says the teacher and school leadership incentive program. So this is money incentive will assist organizations in expanding comprehensive performance-based compensation systems or human capital management systems for teachers. Okay, and in addition, it goes, and I've read a lot of the work by the Council of Chief State School Officers. I know what their plan has been all along for ESEA, and I can tell you it's in there. And, you know, these are the same people that gave us Common Core, so I'm not feeling real good about that. But to say that the alternative is not there ready to go is really not the reality. The alternative
And what bill in Congress is that, Victoria?
What was that?
What bill is Congress considering that would have a better alternative?
They didn't consider it.
If they vote no on...
Okay, they've got a combination of things, but this is the thing, is why have we not, as people, come together as a nation and force Congress to actually do what they should have done 8 years ago? And they aren't looking at the alternatives. The Keeping Pace Act, that Senator Kennedy had sponsored was an excellent piece of legislation that didn't get any further than committee. I think he actually was trying to make an adjustment to what he knew was a horrible law. And it, you know, it should have gone through. It's sitting there. It could be done. The leadership...
Wait. Senator Kennedy's been dead for several years, and right-wing Republicans control both houses of Congress. So that's an interesting piece of history, but how do you make it happen in the current political center? The no vote consigns the students, families, and teachers of this nation five more years of No Child Left Behind.
No, not if you have the grassroots movement on the ground welling up saying, no, we're not going to take it anymore. And that stops No Child Left Behind right there.
How does that happen? It's already forced. The grassroots movement has played a major role in forcing Congress to take up these bills. The Senate
bill is substantially superior to the House bill. I helped organize it. So, anyway, I think we're getting...
Yeah, you two are battling, which I love, but also we got other people here. But Bob, I want to come back to the question when you asked me what Trojan horse and what they're talking about. I was a little taken back by that question. For me... almost every single bill that comes out of the House, the Senate, or the White House is a bill aimed at privatizing public education. In and out, the destruction of public education and the erection of national privatized public education that benefits private individuals as opposed to a public good. Now, I was a little taken back when you asked me that question. It's there in my little description. If you've listened to the shows, you know what my answer would be, and et cetera. So you sort of got me on that one. Jesse and Jeanette, you guys join this, please, because this is what we're all here to do.
Sure. It's simple. What bill are they considering? They're considering a compromise that sells children short. That's the way I see it. Now we could say, well, no bill will leave everything the same, but I do not trust this Congress, this Senate. I don't trust the White House at the moment to give us legislation that would honor childhood. I don't trust them at all. And to give them, if we buy in and say, oh, well, we couldn't get something else, so we take the compromise. Well, this nation has a history of compromising on workers' rights, on human rights. Now, at this point, this is about our children. And while I love Fairchess, I love you, Bob, I love Jeanette, I love the work that you're doing, I'm drawing a line in the sand that says, no, if you cannot give us the bill that truly honors our children, truly honors out what teachers do, that truly honors classrooms, I don't know. All I see is going back to the States. That's what we had before No Child Left Behind, and that was a den of inequity in itself. You know, we're talking about equity in the classroom. I got different data. Let's look at classroom size. Let's look at services to children. Let's look at wraparound service. We're not talking about any of that right now. I do not trust Congress or the Senate or any versions of these bills. When NCLB came out, they said it was full of good intentions. $1.2 trillion later, 13 years later, all that's been done is devastate our children, demoralize our teachers, and close our public schools. So I don't trust them. So I'm not ready to compromise. I'm ready to dig in and fight.
Jeanette, back to you. I have a question. Well, actually, a statement, more or less. Following the great victory of opting out, I know they're in Long Island, and you can give the details that I'm not quite sure on, but there was an election where candidates that your group supported won 50-some-odd seat out of 71 seats open. Am I right on that?
Yep. Our board of ed election We have 124 districts here on Long Island, and we endorsed candidates this year. We endorsed them last year, too, but we didn't do it in such a sort of a grand way. There was only a handful. This year, we endorsed 70, low 70s candidates, and we ended up getting 51 of them on their Board of Ed seats, scattered throughout the island on all different in all different districts. So that was not only just a big win for us. Yeah, it was not just a win as far as, you know, yay, we got, you know, this many, this percentage, but it's a big win because the legislators took notice. The media, it got a lot of media attention, and they recognized that this is not just translating just the parents sending in letters knocking the kids out, but now it's starting to translate into votes. And that's what got them extremely concerned and nervous. And now we were very, very close to having our legislators pass the education tax credit. Our legislators were telling us that they were getting completely hounded and bombarded by supporters of the ETC. And we launched our own campaigns against it, and, you know, we won it. They backed down, and they did not pass that. And that would have been a huge, huge loss and a big boost for privatizing. It would have stripped, in the long run, really stripped our public schools and been a real start to this whole, the privatizing just sweeping across our state. So, you know, it is translating into things happening. Now, as far as not compromising for you know, the federal legislation, you know, again, I'm somebody who, when there was a lot of pressure to support a couple bills here, Nolan's bill, and that a lot of groups did support, and a lot of groups came out and said, okay, this is the best we got, let's go with it. We still stood strong and stood our ground and said, we can't. We took a vote, and we just couldn't do it because it just wasn't enough. It wasn't what we're looking for, and it wasn't going to do what it is we needed it to do. So we felt very strongly that we weren't going to support that, but we're only able to take that position because of the fact that our movement now is so strong and so huge that we now are speaking in a position of extreme power over the whole situation. Whereas with the federal government, I'm not sure the country is quite at that point yet to be able to say no compromises and we're just going to keep fighting for something when then we're stuck with No Child Left Behind. And like I said, with New York, we are poised to really take them right out from their knees and really hammer these guys, especially next year election season. But going back to keeping No Child Left Behind will hinder that. And even if the renewal isn't much better, if it's even a little better and strips out some of their excuses of, hey, this is a federal thing, we can't, you know, there's nothing we can do, that excuse has protected them. They've been hiding behind that excuse for so long. And if some of that can be stripped away from them, now they're open and vulnerable. So in a way, I understand that's a little bit of a selfish thing for me because New York does have this huge, huge movement that's behind us. And I understand other states would probably, not be any better off at all. So it is a little bit, you know, hey, in New York, this would definitely improve our situation. So I get it. I get both sides. I get the whole idea.
You said exactly what I was going to say, and that is something in our conversation last month. What happened in New York, a perfect storm that allowed you guys to be able to pull off all these victories. And could we export from New York to the rest of the state in order to try and have that type of success going forward? What I was going to say is that you guys are emboldened because of your individual success. And I can see why you, the individual and the group, would take the position, well, we'll take X if that gives us the power to be able to flex our muscles even more here at our state versus someone in Mississippi saying, oh, hell no. We just went through almost 100 years of Plessy versus Ferguson, the separate and unequal. So you're doing exactly what I thought you were going to do, and you're representing parents, and I hope parents are listening and will take to heart the things that you're saying. It's terrific. We have about 10 minutes left. Let's get back to the central question that I raised for this show, and that is,
are there any other elements hidden within either of the versions in the House and Senate that will threaten public education if that particular bill or some combination bill is passed? Because I see things that are back to me, Bob and my Trojan horse thing that you didn't get, that are there that could put us right back where we are, and that is the federal government helping and state governments helping the privatization movement move quicker, faster, and less encumbered than No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top.
Well, so, anyone see anything that... The House still does have many of those elements.
What'd you say, Bob?
The bill that is moved in the House and is now stalled there has many movements that would defund public education, and we do not support that. But groups that strongly support public education, both the NEA, the AFT, Network for Public Education, Parents Across America, Badass Teachers, do support the initiatives in the Senate bill because it does substantially more good than the limited amount of harm that it continues. And those groups understand that the alternative to having a bill like the Senate bill come out of Congress this year is the continuation of No Child Left Behind with all the damaging effects that Jesse nicely articulated. It's horrible for kids, it's horrible for parents, it's horrible for teachers, and horrible for schools. And unless we get rid of its worst elements, even if some bad stuff prevails, we will have 3 to 5 more years at a minimum of No Child Left Behind in effect across the United States in every public school, in Mississippi to Alaska. And by the way, it's New York did a wonderful job, but other states have strong movements. There are opt-out bills on the governor's desk in Maine and in Delaware right now. Minnesota, Florida, Colorado all passed legislation cutting back testing, not as much as we wanted. New Jersey's about to pass bills like that too. This is a broad national grassroots movement that has shown that it can win when the fight is at the state level. Passing the federal bill, particularly with the Tesker Amendment, puts the fight in a place where we can win.
Okay. Vicki, anything else in the bill that you see that may threaten public education and enhance the privatization moving forward?
Yes, it magnifies greatly the privatization movement through all of the charters that they and charter support that they've put in the Senate bill. And that is, they specifically are funding startups, replication, and expansion. And probably the worst piece in there is when they support charter management organizations and say that they're giving this extra funding for high need, but that high need that they're defining means charter management organizations that serve not fewer than 10,000 children from poverty-stricken families. So they're making the charter management organizations, you know, it's like providing this cash cow for them. And in addition, the preschool wording also becomes a cash cow in the way they define eligible children. It's at 200% of the poverty level and families with assets that don't exceed $1 million. I'm taken really aback by that. When I look at what we have today in Idaho, you know, with the lowest percentage of students that are in preschool, and I'm really wondering where the money's going to come from to supply some quality education for K-12, let alone for the students that really do need some quality preschool education. I just think that, you know, it just blows me away, because what they're producing are centers of excellence. I mean, you can just see the newest business rising up. So between the charters and their new definition of preschools and what they're going to do with that, I mean, we just really are still missing what educational quality and equality looks like in this country when you look at this bill. I mean, I'm really, really appalled. And in addition to that, the other big privatization piece is the training of our leadership. And I mean, it's like they got a partner deal going on here, because all they're asking is for these nonprofits to toss in 25%. That's you know, divvy in 25% of the cost of the program, and federal, and we taxpayers are going to put in 75% for people like the Broad Center and Mark Tucker's National Institute for School Leaders to continue to do their work. And their
now,
work
I saw
is
that.
Training.
I saw that. Vicki, let me stop you because we've got just a couple minutes. I want to get Jessica.
Oh,
but
sorry.
I saw
okay.
all of those points. I saw all
anyway,
of those points.
Anyway, those are the big ones
saw.
I saw.
Bob, and I'm not bringing you back in terms of a comment per se, but that's what I was talking about in terms of Trojan horses inside the bill. Jesse, let's get you, and then we have to wrap it up.
All right. For me, it's simple. We're going to give the states this power, and we're going to feel better because we took it away from the feds. I don't want either of them to have any of this power. I want this testing pain to end, but I'm talking about states that have cut their funding to our universities, our community colleges, across this nation, in my state, 50% in 10 years. And if you think they won't do that to our public education systems, our public schools, I think you're crazy. I say it's time to opt out, draw the line, fight. I'm telling people on City Hall in New York City with Councilman Drun, I stood there and I chanted and I said, no justice, no votes, no justice, no votes. I'll tell you what, come 2016, you tell everybody who's running, no justice, no votes.
Okay. Folks, Jesse is going to take the next few minutes to give us an update on his, I call, road trip. That's a regular part of this show until he completes his walk to D.C., that he gets the last few minutes to give the nation an update. You're welcome to stay on. I'm going to take, Jesse, a few minutes from you towards the end to do a dedication to a person that I want to dedicate this show to. So, Jesse, take us to our update.
All right. You know,
the elevator version.
Sure. In Clearwater, I met parents, I met opt-out parents, students, and teachers, and we celebrated the resistance. In the Bronx, I met Jamar Bowman and Casas Middle School students, and we had a march and a protest, and we joined with Let 'Em Play in New York City to fight for play in our schools because testing is driving out play. When I went to Upper Manhattan, I went to Reynolds High School, an alternative high school, where teachers and their principal celebrated my arrival, gave me smoothies, and we talked about this resistance, growing it, not compromising. When I went to Hofstra University, I had an audience full of female teachers who are not ready to give up, who want to fight, who are asking their unions to fight harder, who are asking the organizations to fight harder. So it's in every step of the way, I'm finding people saying, fight, 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 not compromise.
And where are you going this week?
This week I'll be in Newark. I'll be at the NJ TV News Studios. I'll be interviewed there. We have a teach-in at their community room. We'll have Save Our Schools New Jersey parents there. We will have North teachers and Dr. Monica Taylor from Montclair University, the North Students Union, and we will have Robert Cabanas from Community United and others in that room. And we're going to talk solutions, because we feel that whenever I go somewhere, I'm hearing solutions. What I'm not hearing is our state legislators and our federal legislators listening to the solutions that are on the ground. So we plan on sharing them and bringing them to the world on this Tuesday at 6:30 in Newark, New Jersey, at the NJTV News Studio.
Let me ask this question. I know you tend to be, compared to me, more optimistic
than I am on most of these issues. What is your most objective assessment of the people's mood from the time you started into where you are now?
I find them like Jeanette talked about tonight. I find them, they are not down, they are not beaten, they are not given up. They are fighting back harder than ever. That's what I'm finding. Everywhere I go, it's not about my walk. It's highlighting the local initiatives. And in the local communities, the people are fighting back, and they're resistant, and they're winning battles.
And, okay, I'm going to take the next few minutes to do a tribute and a dedication. So, again, I hope you people stay with me. 10 years ago, a young man and his family came out to Los Angeles from Atlanta, Georgia. The young man was at that time going to enroll into a specialized college here that he was so excited about. I met them for the first time because they came to the building that I live in. The parents, when they left, and the mother called me and said, "Would you do us a favor? Would you watch over our son when he comes back?" I was blown away. I was honored, and I told them, yes, I would. When the young man came back 10 years ago, we started sort of like a guardianship with me being his guardian, looking over him. And I've had a chance to see this young man go from 18 to now he's 28 to grow into a fantastic young adult and all. He's leaving Los Angeles Tuesday morning. And Jeanette, if you're still there, he's moving to your city, New York. And New York is going to get an incredible, fantastic, wonderful young man. The young man's name is Timothy Covington. Goes by the name of Tim. I'm going to miss him immensely. And yesterday we sort of did a redo of the things that we have done over the last year, and especially the first year he was here. We got into my car. We drove to the first restaurant that I took him to, and I bought all of his meals during that early years because I told him, as long as you were in school, I will pick up the tab on all these things that I do. He picked up the tab for me yesterday. He said that was one of the things that he had to do before he left Los Angeles, was to take me out to lunch and pick up the tab. He's gotten to that point where now he can pick up the tab. During our lunch, we talked about education like crazy. And he has grown so much in the past 10 years. We talked about the student loan situation. He's paying off student loans. We talked about the government cutting back on support for higher education, for high school, middle school, elementary schools. We talked about the politics and the politicians who are driving what now he understands is what I call the war on public education. These were conversations that we couldn't have had 10 years ago when he came out. And for me to see him being able to carry on such a fantastic conversation, offering his own theory as to why and what has been happening and what's likely to happen with different people being elected to the presidency and et cetera, was really a fantastic thing. I'm going to miss him immensely, although I know he's moving to New York to better his own career, so I'm extremely happy for him. But Tim, I am going to miss you, and I won't be able to see that continued growth, but here's a surprise for you. I'm coming to New York this fall. And so I'm going to look you up, and hopefully you and I are going to stay in touch between now and then, of course, and afterwards. But I'm coming to New York, and I am definitely going to look you up to see how you're doing in New York. That's my tribute to Tim. I love him. He's like the son. I feel like an empty nester now, but I had to get this in. Now, I got a minute left. I'm going to start a new series either this week or next week, and it's called Profile and Courage. I'm going to identify and have on the show teachers, parents, organizations who have distinguished themselves as ed activists, ed advocates, who have, in many cases, been put in harm's way by taking a stand and being honest and true to themselves and to educating our children and protecting the profession. And Jeanette, I'm going to come back to you sometime during that series as one of the people that I want to profile your courage. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say goodbye. It's been a very intense show. We've got different opinions coming out. Hopefully, audience, you got some information that you didn't have before and will hopefully improve your understanding of what's going on or on this particular issue that is so important for the survival of public education. With that, I'm going to have to say goodbye to everyone and say goodbye to the audience and hopefully see everyone back next week. Goodbye, everyone.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.